This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
So it's been, we got a couple episodes out, and then it's kind of been like a month. I think it's about time we should do another show.
Yeah. I'm disappointed in you guys.
All right, Phil's on board.
You expected one 2 weeks ago.
Kevin's on board. How about you, Andrew?
Yeah, I love independent comic books.
All right, then here we are. Welcome to episode 331 of Indie Comic Book Noise. And you've got Steve Raker here and Andrew Sanford, the LA Rabbit. We've got Kevin Whirlwind X and Phil, the mysterious
Ottawa Otter.
The Ottawa Otter himself. Half of us from north of the border, half of us from below the border, all of us loving indie comics and getting a chance to talk about it here. Thanks to Derek Coward and his Deliberate Noise Network, that you can find more info about on DeliberateNoiseNetwork.com, and his flagship show of the network, ComicBookNoise.com. And you can hear us talk about Marvel comics that you won't hear us talk about here over on Marvel Noise. Right, guys?
Lately, it's just been you, Steve.
Kevin's been really slacking on that.
Well, we had you had a birthday, Phil. We had Thanksgiving down here. We had Andrew went overseas. It's been a busy month, so
I'll always make time.
I appreciate that. We can count on Phil. Woohoo! And
I'm the least important person. It's the other guys we need.
If you're the one that's always here, you're not the least important person. And also, you could check us out on our Facebook page that Derek just set up for us over there. So come on over and feel free to shoot out any indie recommendations that you might have for us, and vice versa.
And we spend time on forums,
which are the 11 o'clock comic forums. And you can get to them probably easiest way is either from the Marvel Noise or Indie Comic Book Noise page. There's a little link right to the side to the forum, or you can search 11 o'clock comics and it'll bring up a forum link that way too.
And that's where I post all the links and pictures for some of the more obscure books that once in a while come across my way. Although I do say, am I the only one that gets the thrill when I hear Derek's introduction about this podcast is not for the easily offended?
I do. I get excited.
Makes me happy because I can be myself almost.
Almost.
Between that and knowing that he has made the theme songs for all these shows together are a wonderful little combination to kick off the show.
I was wondering, would it be useful or is it too reductive for us to come up with categories of independent books by publishers? Because it seems funny to me, but maybe it's not useful to compare like an Image book with like some book that some guy's stapling together in his garage.
Well, with the four of us here, I think that comparisons aren't necessary. This isn't a competition. There is no wagering.
The way I look at it, there's a Marvel Noise, a DC Noise, so this one kind of covers everything else, no?
Exactly.
Oh, no, not in the sense of what we covered, no, but just in the idea of when I talk about an indie book, I wondered if it would help if I flagged it as, like, this is a self-published, or this is a mid-tier, or some sort of rough designation to give people an idea, or just for our own thinking. Sometimes when I'm mentally comparing two books or mulling them over, I do consider the publisher, the source, or... like if I'm reading a Marvel book, I'll have a different expectation than if I'm reading an indie book or an Image book versus a Dark Horse. I mean, maybe that's not a fair thing for me as the reader to do.
No, that's absolutely true. I'm the same way.
To some degree, but I don't know.
I think the category should be whatever Andrew has been reading.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? This is the Selfish Podcast, admittedly, where it gives us a chance to talk about the other stuff we're reading besides the Marvel books we always talk about over on Marvel Noise. So
that's why we'll squeeze in like Vertigo or maybe even Icon.
Yeah, something weird, something different, something that's not main universe Big Two type book. It could be the stapled pamphlet. It could be a good fortune cookie you might have come across.
I don't know. I just thought I was curious about your guys' kind of states of mind and if you consider the publishers or the source of the material when you pick up a book or if you try and be a blank slate.
No, I do. The convention books, I don't judge as harsh.
I think I do. Like regardless if you're from like self-published or it's like, I don't know, Dark Horse or whatever, it's like you should be putting effort and everything.
No, but
like,
you got to look like how long they've been doing it, maybe, or I don't know.
You got to put out a good product either way.
And they don't have as much money to put out that good product sometimes.
I think having no reputation works better than having a bad, you know, having some reputation that might not be so great. Like Kevin said, you got to put good stuff out there.
Yeah.
For me, I try to look at, when I'm looking at non, you know, Big Two books, I do kind of make it an even playing field. I keep all my non-two books in their own sub bunch of long boxes on my shelf here in the bunker and group them all together. I think that you know, if a book has a bad, if a publisher has a bad reputation, it more stands out than if it has a good reputation or no reputation. I kind of think of it all. Just I base it more on the material when I'm thinking indie books.
Yeah, if it's in like a real indie book, then I'm like, yeah, if you have a few typos, I'm going to let that slide. Where like if it's a bigger publisher, I'm going to be like, what is going on there?
Right. Yeah, I agree.
That makes sense. I don't know, when I thought about Image and like they have some really famous, say, you know, you think Brian K. Vaughan. I mean, the term indie, comparing him to some, like I said, some of the books I've been reading, seems hardly fair.
Image isn't really indie anymore. Same for Dark Horse, but still though, like,
but
it's not. It's
some of their books still sell the same as like an indie book. So
in Image though,
it's
don't
not like all of them are selling 50,000 copies now.
Yeah, in Image, don't you have to make your own book though, and then they'll
but
distribute
there's so
it?
Many. So there's so many big names over there though now.
Yeah. Like, well, it's the place to get it out. It's more of a distribution model than a company.
But Image is so high quality. I don't know. I consider them.
Well, that's up to the creators too, though.
Yeah,
it's had its.
But I don't know that they would just accept even if you paid the fee. Like, I don't think they're a complete vanity press. Like, I'm sure they have standards, and
they're
I would imagine they've rejected books before.
Oh yeah, yeah. There's a lot of things. Yeah, that you know, it's not just, hey, here's this random thing, publish this, and I'm like, no.
And at least they finished their series now. They used to have a problem where they'd put out like one issue, two issues, and then that was it.
Well, that's not really Image's fault. So
no, remember that one comic?
Image United?
Yeah, that was bad. That's really bad. But there was one issue, a really cool one, where like it was a girl and she went into like this fantasy world.
Oh, you mean the non-player?
Yeah, non-player. That's one I wish finished, but it never...
Hey, issue two is coming out soon.
Oh,
I mean,
whole...
Yeah, he broke his wrist, but then he kind of got on this side project. And I mean, we knew it was going to be a while, but the broken wrist thing really threw it off.
I thought that was just dead, but I love the first issue.
No, last I heard, he was still gunning it, but he works, I think, in video games. Something where he can make better money than self-published comics.
Yeah.
Which I imagine is just about anything.
IDW is reprinting Max. Are those oversized, do you know?
No. Well, if they are, they're only slightly. I have seen them in the store. I didn't flip through them, but if they're oversized, like I said, it's going to be not like a artist edition type thing.
Okay.
I think they're doing something with that, aren't they?
At the end of, you know, it's just remastered, so it's maximized, right? That's the. So
I thought maybe they meant like
it's recolored, and who knows what the collection will be? I mean, they're just reprinting single stuff. When they collect it, it might be oversized. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't solicited the collection yet. That work would look good big, especially if it was recolored.
Yeah, I'd get it for sure.
Well, they have put out a few treasury editions, like some of those G.I. Joe stories came out like that and some other stuff. Danger Girl, maybe?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
What other indie stuff are you reading, Phil? Of Image. You said they're your favorite publisher.
Lately, I haven't read a lot of Image. Lately, it's been a lot of Boom.
Oh.
Like, I just read... it was originally published by Avatar, but Boom got the rights, so they reprinted it to Robocop, the Frank Miller one, which was his original script for the second movie. And currently right now, I guess they're doing his third script or something like that.
Hmm.
And I flipped through the movie a bit, the second movie, just to compare it a bit, and it seems like a whole different thing. But I'm not saying this is a very good RoboCop comic, but it's probably one of the better ones out there. But it definitely would have made a superior second movie.
Isn't that why he came back to comics anyways, Frank Miller? Because Hollywood, things didn't exactly work out over there?
I don't know. I didn't even know he wrote that movie until recently. I never even knew that.
I thought that's why he didn't, people wanted to adapt Sin City, but after his RoboCop experience, he's like, well, I don't really want anyone
I don't blame them because they changed everything. Like this would have been a pretty awesome movie, but very violent. I guess they wanted RoboCop PG.
Yeah, I'd imagine.
At the time, and this would have been like a 3-hour movie probably. But basically it was just OCP or whatever they were called, that organization. OCP. Basically hire all these mercenaries and bad guys to be the new cops because the other cops are on strike. And RoboCop's kind of on his own rogue fighting them, which I think is kind of like the third movie a bit. I believe. I haven't rewatched it yet, but I think that's kind of the storyline there. So I think they kind of based that movie on this one. But overall, like I say, there haven't really been any good RoboCop comics. But if you are going to read RoboCop, I guess I'd go with this one for sure.
Well, it's smart to get the license because that reboot's coming out. So
yeah, what did you guys think of that? Did you guys watch the trailer? Or?
No. I haven't.
No, are you guys RoboCop fans?
I might have saw it. I'm not sure.
You haven't seen it. Kevin hasn't seen Willow. He hasn't seen Labyrinth. He hasn't seen anything.
I saw those, but I didn't see RoboCop, I admit. Never saw those or read any of the comics. I know what it is. I've seen clips of it from, I Love the 80s or whatever. Yeah, never cared to see. It came out probably when I was, more in my... 16 to 20. Yeah, well, I was in my late teens, so it wasn't.
It horrified me.
Wasn't that interested?
When he gets blown apart. Well, at least I know you've seen it, Andrew.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no way
you should report to a rape crisis center.
What?
Yeah, I mean Peter Weller, like he's had some ups and downs, but that guy's solid. I mean, I don't really quite forgive him for that abomination of a Philip K. Dick movie he was in.
Which
son of a bitch. Screamers. I'm a big Philip K. Dick fan, and Hollywood has just taken a big dump all over him.
I thought I liked Screamers. That's the one where they're in the desert.
Screamers. Oh, that the problem was awesome. It has nothing to do with Philip K. Like, that's the problem is, it can be a perfectly fine movie, but it has nothing to do with...
Yeah.
By the time it goes through all the rewrites and everything, it's no longer resembles anything that he put in the material. I mean, even Blade Runner, which is fairly... Android's Dream Electric Sheep is pretty different. I mean, obviously, the closest is that Linkletter nightmare that's done in the rotoscoping type of... A Scanner Darkly. I don't know what they call that process, but it's like those commercials. And the problem with that is it's this kind of... It's a fairly faithful adaptation, but I think they made a lot of key missteps. But anyways, that's a whole separate... I mean, there was a comic. I actually have the graphic novel of that, but that's a whole separate tirade that I can go on. And we're on RoboCop, so...
Yeah, well, isn't that almost human TV show sort of RoboCop-ish?
I haven't watched it, but it seemed like it was all RoboCop, you know, like,
yeah,
part organic, part robotic, not a cyborg.
Yeah. Almost, I start thinking of the surrogates or something else, like how, you know, I guess a lot of those concepts, it's like, eventually you're going to wander into that territory.
I slipped in a few Megadeth lyrics right there, for all you old-timey metal fans.
I read a good Image comic recently, a new series. It's four issues in, so it's from this year, 2013. And it's from J. Michael Straczynski with art by Tom Mandrake, who is really turning in some of the nicest work I've seen from him, perhaps ever. The colors are by Hi-Fi, and this is Sidekick. Have you heard of this book?
I've heard of it, yeah.
I haven't got to it yet, but I'm excited to.
It's four issues in, and it's interesting. There's this stereotypical bit of a Superman-Batman amalgamation superhero, the Red Cowl. And he wears red and blue, and his chest symbol is even his own, like, smiling red cowled face. That's, like, his insignia, right? And his sidekick is Flyboy. And Flyboy is, in the first issue, he's sitting right next to the Red Cowl while they're, like, riding in a convertible vehicle, like in a parade. And the Red Cowl's, like, assassinated JFK style right next to Flyboy. So and in the aftermath, nothing is going right for Flyboy. The Red Cowl, who has, like, a Bruce Wayne alter ego, and he was, like, the Dick Grayson to him. That was the Batman-Superman kind of combo. The Red Cowl leaves none of his money to Flyboy. And being Flyboy was kind of all he was, but, like, no one's taking him seriously as a hero. The media won't, like, let him, like, graduate to being, you know, any kind of solo hero. One of the Red Cowl's enemies, this female Julia Moonglow, whose powers are really unidentified yet, but she keeps, like, having long talks with him, and she's, like, subtly manipulating him towards what end, it's unknown yet. He even tries to leave town and go to another city and rebrand himself as the Bullet. And, like, the town all is getting behind him and everything, and, like, the town's going to sponsor him, and he's like, oh, I'm hooked up. And then it comes out that he's Flyboy, and everyone turns against him, and he's got to, like, go back with his tail between his legs back to his original city, where he's just being ridiculed in the press. He's just on this downward spiral. The big twist is that the reader knows, but Flyboy doesn't know, that the Red Cowl isn't dead somehow. And he's, like, still alive somewhere, sipping Foster's in the shade, basically. So, like, there's something going on here. Like, is this someone setting somebody up? And you just don't... You have no idea where it's going. And JMS in the back, Matter, in the latest issue, at least, in issue 4, has a text piece where he's saying, it's really hard to be writing a story that is the setup because you don't know what the story is that you're reading yet. Like, what you think you're reading isn't the story, and it's so funny to be writing not the story to this other cryptic subtext thing that's going to be happening or where this story is going to go as it's revealed. Something weird is going on here, but it's very engaging enough just on a surface level and entertaining enough. It almost feels like a Garth Ennis book, but it's just not quite as tawdry, you know? But it's really interesting, and like I said, it's going somewhere, and JMS seems to have some sort of meta plan in place that I'm really curious to see how it unfolds.
I thought he would write about how much trouble he has with the endings of books.
Oh, here we go.
So he gives up a little at the end, but I don't know. I loved Rising Star by him. It did get boring by the end, but I don't know. I like him.
It may not end, but this is a hell of a setup.
Yeah.
Even without the twist, it sounded interesting. Like, I could go for a title just with that stuff, and, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I like when they do, like, different versions of our big heroes or whatever. Different stories on them, twists on them.
Yeah, even something like Supreme Power was, like, dealt with a little media stuff and, you know, advertising and selling out and all that. Kind of interesting because, you know, a lot of superheroes and stuff back then didn't really deal with that subject matter.
And because this isn't the story, that's not really spoilage. And really the path and the way that these scenes are written are really entertaining. I really haven't given anything away as far as the experience you get going through these steps.
At the moment, this is an ongoing?
Yeah. And four issues are in the can already.
Huh. Because if you don't know the real story, you can't really say if this could go for like 50 issues or whatever. Yeah.
And Mandrake is penciling and inking, and it's tight. I mean, he's doing a lot of like more shadowy. His muscles look more sinewy, and his art has more depth to it than I'm used to seeing from remembering his old like New Mutants days or something.
And if this is the only book he's working on, then I'm sure he'll be doing it for a bit.
Yeah, check it out.
I think with a lot of these indie series, we can kind of... I think if you get maybe 24 or 25 issues, you can consider yourself pretty lucky. I think the days of... I mean, there are a few exceptions, but I think generally it's best to kind of go into them thinking, you know, oh, it's going to be... You know, maybe 20 issues will be a good run.
You can get a nice story in that many issues, though. Like,
oh, for sure. But yeah. I think it's the days of thinking, oh, we might get 50 or 100 or pretty well.
No, that's more of a vertigo thing.
I think it's kind of a mistake to go in thinking you're going to get that many issues. You should go in thinking, well, here's one story, and if I get to tell more, great. Like, otherwise, you're kind of, I don't know.
Like, sadly, Prophet's ending.
Yeah, but now it's going to get another miniseries.
Oh, is it? Cool.
Yeah.
But it's just a mini.
Well, it's supposed to wrap up it's supposed to be a big war.
Exactly. So. It's wrapping up just like Glory. Then what do I have? I have nothing.
Also, these guys, they have options. And I think a lot of them, not that they necessarily get bored per se, but I wonder if the new shiny object kind of is like, oh, like I've told that story and now I want to do this. You know what I mean? There's a lot. It seems like you have a lot of options if you're a successful creator.
Yeah, because I'm sure there's always readers that say keep on going forever, but then, you know, there's other people like, yeah, I kind of want to do other stuff.
You're both wrong. I know exactly what's going to happen. Rob Liefeld is going to take over again and he's going to screw it all up.
Yeah, he hasn't come out with another Glory or whatever.
He took over Youngblood again and dumb again.
Is that coming out again?
Yeah, once in a while. Yeah, not too long
once
ago.
Once in a while. Came out.
He draws good faces. He does.
I think those guys, once they get back to work, they realize how much work comics are. Like, it's fun maybe to come in and do an issue or consult or something, but the grind of producing regular comics.
I was loving Tim Seeley's Bloodstrike until he took over. And he screwed it all up.
Well, I had the pleasure of attending the Long Beach Horror and Comic Con.
Nice.
Quite recently. And I know I said I was going to get to bigger indie books, but maybe I'll just... maybe
you
I just
lie. You can't change who you are.
Yeah. I'll talk.
What I like about it is kind of discovering not just new companies, but new talent. There was one table for this company, oldcollegecomics.com. I'll throw a little link. And they were from the local art college. And they all decided to get together and make their own comic book company. And I was like, whoa, that's pretty badass. I remember in college I made comics with a bunch of kids. But we never had the wherewithal or planning or desire or whatever to go make a company. So I went and picked up one of their offerings. What was interesting is they were all flip books, which, as you know, I'm kind of not that enamored with. Yeah. But I think in this instance, it has the value of showcasing multiple creators without giving them so little space. I think sometimes with the smaller books, when they're anthologies, you're really not giving much space to new creators. But there's one artist, Catherine Yee, Y-I, that I really, really like. And I think we're going to see more of her in the future. She does a story called Alpha, which is wordless, sort of about the beginning and creation of the world.
Ooh.
Sweet.
And it's really a nice, in some ways, not visually, but story-wise, in some ways it sort of reminded me of One Soul by Ray Fox. Obviously, you know, this is 12 pages and that's an entire graphic novel, but just sort of this idea of creation and birth and death and the cycle of life. And I just really liked her artwork a lot. And they have one page of some of her rough designs and everything. And then the flip story is the girl who goes all the way, which is kind of a strange, more your traditional indie type book. But I get a bit of a, I think what led to my tweet a few days ago about the manga thing. I think there's a manga influence here. We've kind of let the younger generation down with Western comics, I think, and failed to engage them, their interest. Because when I go to the manga and anime type events, I see a lot more younger people. I see a lot more diversity, a lot more women. And I just feel like us as fans and the medium in general of Western style comics kind of just sort of wrote off trying to get new people in years ago. And as a result, manga's kind of filled that void. And I like that she's working in Western comics in a sense, but it just seems like we've lost that battle, you know?
Not at all. We have more than ever now. Now there's all these friggin' hot chicks reading comics. What are you talking about? There's been a big boom of it.
Yeah, but I don't think we're getting... I think if you go to these other events, you'll see a lot more younger people.
No, I'm fucking them, man. I know these chicks. They like our type of comic
books. I'm moving to Canada.
I'm just saying, when I go to like Anime Expo, it seems like this is where the young people are at. And when I go to the comic book conventions here, I see a lot of guys that look like me. Sad. Reading pathetic, tired, played-out Spider-Man comics that they've been reading for the last 75 years or whatever.
But do you
like, we just need to have some kind of way to get them excited about all types of comics and not just manga.
Well, I think
they need a movie.
Saga and everything like that has a more diverse audience that excites, I think, part of the audience you're talking about.
It does, but I'm also talking from a creator standpoint. Like I said, I go to Anime Expo and walk through Artist Alley. Like, it's a lot different looking than when I go to the Artist Alley. And not to say there aren't prominent. Sarah Richard was at the one here, and I picked up her new sketchbook and a print, and I've gotten commissions from her. I mean, Amanda Connor, there's like tons of. But when you just look at the overall picture of Artist Alley, you know, it, to me it looks a lot of the same names and faces. And I just, when I go to Anime Expo, I see this young tide of exciting young people that are doing different things and pushing the genre. And I'd like to get them, win them back. I just feel bad we weren't able to get them hooked on the superhero drug.
Hey, don't tell Phil that there's an Anime Expo within Fan Expo.
Shut your mouth. Don't ruin that con for me.
And I'm not saying that we've, you know, that obviously, you know, it's not like comics are going away or anything.
Yeah.
I just feel there's been too much fan service to some of us already established people. And I think that opened the door. We never should have let manga in the door. You know what I mean?
Oh!
Gobbling them people up.
They're the next generation of creators, though, these kids. They're going to grow up with these influences. They're going to like the characters that we know from the big two because of the movies and the video games and the bedspreads and all that stuff. And they're going to combine them. They'll shape the market the way that you're thinking will appeal to them when it's their turn. Right now, I'm still in the driver's seat, though.
We're the ones with the money.
Yeah, I'm paying that kid's allowance. You know, I don't read manga at all. Almost as a rule, that it just doesn't appeal to me too much, or it's too much of an investment of, you know, the size and scope of the release. Yeah. But I actually have a manga book that I read recently that was so awesome and quick and wordless. You were saying something before, Andrew, about a wordless book, I think, right?
Yeah, this Alpha with Joe Bryant as the writer and Catherine Yee, and it's wordless.
Can I jump in with this, or are you?
Yeah, yeah. No, go ahead. Have
you heard of Gon, G-O-N? It's by Masashi Tanaka.
Didn't Dark Horse or DC or someone publish this before? I thought this has been more than one publisher.
I think he's a big horror writer in Japan, isn't he?
I don't know. Right now, this is a new printing by KodanshaComics.com. But you can get it through Amazon. There's 7 volumes overall, ages 10 and up. It's $5 for the first volume and about $9 for the other volumes each. And the size is they're 5 by 7.5, so they're small, like smaller than a paperback size, kind of. They're about paperback size actually, but they're only about 1/2 inch thick, so it's really easy to flip through. And it's manga, black and white. You got to read it backwards and all that. But it's wordless, and the deal is that Gon is the last baby dinosaur. And he's 1 year old. And this was around in the 90s originally over in Tokyo.
He's in the Street Fighter game.
Exactly.
What?
He was in a SNES game. Right.
Tekken.
I think there was a game called Gon, actually, for the SNES.
He was also a character.
But what the deal is that this last baby dinosaur is interacting with the animals, the flora, and the fauna of the tertiary period, which is like ended 2 million years ago, but went for like almost 70 million before that. So it's kind of the animals that we know, Kodiak bears and, forest animals, basically, and prairie animals, etc. But you've got this little tiny runt of a dinosaur who's immature and who's kind of finding his way in this world he never created, so to speak. It's got a real Age of Reptiles vibe to it because it's wordless and it's about animals. There's no words, there's no sound effects even. But the animal artwork, and I'll share it with you guys and post it on the forum too, the artwork is fantastic. It's so detailed and beautiful. It's really overly rendered and just looks beautiful in black and white. There's 4 chapters in the small paperback here. Gon Eats and Sleeps, where he is alongside bears that are hunting and eating salmon in a stream, and he's kind of finding his way to fit in or not. Gon Goes Hunting, where he's on like a Serengeti kind of a plane, and he jumps on the back of a freaking lion that's chasing prey, like chasing an antelope, and he chomps onto the back of the lion's skull to like agitate him to like leap at the prey, and then eats the lion and the prey. It's like crazy. Gon builds a mansion. He finds a bunch of stream beavers building a dam and copies them like to exponential levels. And it's not really a humorous book, but it's so just like natural nature-y, primitive, simple storytelling. It's really cool. The last one is Gon Goes Flying, where the story opens up and Gon is in a golden eagle youngling's nest on a cliffside. And there's like a pesky bobcat that keeps stalking the nest whenever the mother golden eagle isn't there. It's got kind of a Sylvester Tweety thing going.
Well, they made that into a cartoon in the Tekken 2 game. When you unlock him and beat the game or whatever, they show the cartoon of him flying, jumping off the cliff.
Oh, cool.
Is that the same thing?
It totally is.
Yeah, and then all the birds or whatever.
Oh, that's neat.
Does he land on a bird or something like that?
I forget also. I remembered, I wouldn't give it away. But I've only read the first volume, but I'm going to be ordering the other 6 because it's, again, the size of it is great for flipping in your hand. I really like the feel of it, and the artwork is beautiful. Something to sit at while you're at the beach or... It's just very nice. It really takes you away.
Always appealed to me as a kid, and I always thought it looked cool, but I never seen them anywhere to buy.
Wait till you see some.
I never picked
art.
It up.
Ugh. You're gonna love.
And,
it.
And if you like Silent Dinosaur books, you should definitely check out Age of Reptiles.
Yes, I've read all those. That's good stuff.
Those are awesome.
Yeah.
I was gonna say it kind of reminded me of Steve Bissett's Tyrant.
Ooh, what's that? I haven't read that.
Me neither.
Familiar with that? That was a book he created about. a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Mm-hmm.
And it's supposed to be, you know, he consulted with a anthropologist, so he tried to make it, you know, what it would be, you know, an actual kind of like a real dinosaur experience as best could be consulted with at the time of the,
yeah,
at the time he was doing it, but it was pretty labor intensive. And I think it kind of, you know, unless a big chunk of money shows up, I think he said he just can't afford to do it. 'Cause right now he's teaching, last I heard.
Yeah. That, certain comics, the silent stuff really works, I find.
Shout out to Owly.
Yeah.
Owly's good. It's
good for kids.
We have some of that. That's the top shelf.
I got my niece that. Well, a couple volumes anyway.
The first I heard of Owly was Jim Shooter, of all people, saying it was a wonderful book, up and coming, and should really check it out. It was one of his favorite things new on the market. And this was years ago, like at the beginning of podcasting, where I heard an interview with him,
mm-hmm.
Where there was a radio show that was then put out as a podcast. And I remember it from then. And then my kiddo read all of the Bone stuff out of school and was looking for something similar, and I remembered the Owly thing and turned him on to that, and he liked the first one. That was good.
Mm-hmm. Me, it was Free Comic Book Day, because they always had them in that.
Mm.
And, it worked.
Just have a real sweetness to them that doesn't seem overly saccharine.
Almost depressing.
And if they're not at reading level yet, it's a great thing to give them.
You know? What I like about the Gon thing is it doesn't shy away from some of the graphicness of, you know, the wild.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not, you know.
I wouldn't have thought that because he's so cartoony, you know.
Not the world around him, though, which is really cool. Really cool.
Yeah, I want those now. How many? You said it was 7 volumes?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm interested in this.
I never knew they were Japanese. Like, I should have known just because of the Tekken game, yeah. But I never even...
Wait till you see the art when it's posted. You're gonna think it's... So I'll post the thing of him chomping the lion's head to make it jump. It's incredible.
That reminds me of, I watched a Dragon Ball cartoon. Had no idea it was from Japan, but I should have been able to figure it out.
Really? That's bad.
I know! It's just like, I'm like, oh, it's cartoons. Oh, well, this is cool.
Who's got something else?
Guess what I read? I read some fried rice.
Say
I'm not
what?
I'm familiar with that.
It says it's issue 2, spring 2012, featuring Rad Dudes in the Wizard's Wand, a most radical comic by Sean Dove.
And?
Don't ask me the publisher because I'm pretty sure it's self-published.
It's probably Sean Dove.
Yes, exactly. It does make a mention of 4-Star Studios here, though, which is interesting.
What's 4-Star Studios?
Sean Dove.
Oh, that's where Mike Norton and a bunch of guys in Chicago
okay.
They were a digital outfit.
Yeah, but no, I know. I listen to the podcasts. Or I used to listen to podcasts or whatever.
It's basically a story of some radical dudes, skateboarding dudes at that. And they're, like, trying to come up with, like, some crazy tricks to film and then, you know, get a lot of accolades on the internet. But they run into this wizard's, I guess, like, sort of staff type of thing. And they're just like, oh, what can we do with this? So they start, like, summoning all these things and, like, making all these wishes. And then, wouldn't you know it, one of them says, hey, it'd be real cool if a giant red dinosaur shows up and, like, you know, their wishes start going crazy, and just hilarious stuff ensues, and, like, the owner of the wand shows up. It's just a lot of crazy fun. Like, it's a short, fast read. It's kind of cartoonish. It has a kind of a graphic design sensibility, because I think he's a graphic designer, and he's into, like, you know, retro video games, monsters, robots, the type of things I would be into. Maybe that's why I grooved... on it when I saw it, and I picked it up, and I'm like, yeah, I think I'll try this out.
Cool.
But, like, the trees are, like, triangles. And I'm like, yeah, I can totally dig the design sense and everything.
Is that all it takes? Draw a triangle for a tree?
Sometimes that's all it takes.
Kevin's a great partner in Pictionary.
I know. I'm just like a circle for the sun and then, you know, some fluffy shape for the clouds. And I'm like, I'm there.
It's my backyard.
Exactly. I don't know. Like, everything doesn't have to be, like, I don't know, ultra crazy and take half an hour to read.
Now,
I think I went... pushed that dial way too far. So.
You're toning it back some, huh?
I'm trying to bring the dial back a little bit the other
don't
way
Don't go
now.
Into the light. Come back to us.
Exactly. Like, you don't... You kind of don't want to... You don't want to mess with things sometimes. And I'm like... I guess it was a response to, like, all the decompression and everything. I'm like, I want my comics to, like, read longer like they used to. And then at some point you're like... Wow, that was an hour and a half, and I only read three comics. It's going to take a long time to read these comics.
Now, did you pick this up at the shop, or did you get it at a con or something? Where'd you come across
this?
No,
I got it at a show.
Okay.
So, yeah, I don't know, like, if it's really how available it is. Probably not that every else.
We should
else
start
has.
Doing research for that when we talk about something like that, so we can let them know if there's, you know, a website or something.
Well, there is a website. where is it?
Sean
Dugan. And thank you for flying.com.
All right.
So I'm sure you could acquire some of his goods from that website.
Will do.
I guess my personal theme of this episode will be revealing my ignorance through comics I buy. Are you boys familiar with this whole webcomic thing?
Yes, for many years.
Well, apparently they put comic books on the interwebs, and then some people collect them and sell them at conventions.
But why would you collect something if it's on the internet? Are people going to pay for something that's free?
And you know what? I'm the worst, because I discover these as Kickstarters, right, when they finally go to print them. And then I'm like, oh, this was a webcomic? Cool. And then I go back and I discover the webcomic that way. I don't find webcomics, but once... someone points me to one or something like that, I'll check it out. But I don't have that check back nature to always keep checking back. So I need to be reminded to go back and then read a whole big hunk of them, you know?
And I prefer it in print too, you know? Like, you want
to. I'm in that same boat. Well, I was led to www.collectorscomic.com, and this guy was selling his first collection. And it's $5, but it was full color. Pretty heavy, and they're just usually like 6 or 8 panel gag strips.
Cool.
And the setup is basically, he's a big comic collector geek of, you know, roughly all our ages, if you average them and carry by 2. And then he's married to a wife who is not at all. So it's a lot of pretty stereotypical gags, but I enjoyed it. I mean, the art is pretty simple.
So it's the Big Bang Theory?
A little bit more specifically actually involving comic books. I don't really know.
Yeah. And it's just
that those things.
There's a lot of inside comic book jokes. And I've read a lot of these, actually. This is one of the ones that I discovered as a kick. They just did a Kickstarter recently. And I actually saw them commenting in the Kickstarter like updates about how they were all getting excited to go to this show. I think I follow them on Facebook as well. But yeah, they're great. What I like is they're really brightly, flatly colored.
Yes.
So they're nice and bright to look at, and they flow real nice, and they're real simple and quick. And I've even leaned over and shown my wife, Debbie, a strip. Oh, get this, get that, you know, and she gets a crack out of them as well, because many of them are, you know, what the wife has to put up with because the husband is a collector. And it's just the two of them, and occasionally there's another character here or there of like his friend or something, but it's usually it's just like the two of them and stuff that's going on, and I really enjoy it. It's good.
Yeah, I thought I had not heard of it, and he had a little corner booth, and he was doing, if you bought the issue, you entered a drawing for a giveaway of some old-timey expensive comic. And I was like, I'll give it a shot, and I really did enjoy it, and they put a funny thing in the printed one, they actually put pictures from their wedding where they did a Superman Wonder Woman, like they're dressed in regular suits. And then in the next panel at the reception, they're dressed as Superman and Wonder Woman.
Yikes.
And like Steve said, it just has a lot of silly, I mean, it read all in one big lump. They tend to run together. But I thought it was funny, and you're right. You can show it to other people who aren't comic book fans, because a lot of the humor is based on how ridiculous collecting is. But it's definitely about a guy that's more of a collector mentality.
And putting up with a spouse, you know, on both ways. You know, sometimes she's getting rid of things that he holds value to, even though there is no value to them monetarily, that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's... Some of it is just living with somebody else type humor, too.
Yes.
And, they're fun.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyways, that was a new discovery for me, and I can throw the link up, but it's www.collectorscomic.com, and they just released their first issue. It was $4.99 for this exciting comic book.
Which is what they kickstarted, I think. Yeah, and like I said, they're on Facebook, too. You can find them that way.
I don't know what this Facebook thing is you keep talking about. I'm on Twitter. That's LA_rabbit1.
Where I harass him daily.
Exactly. We all need him there.
Except Phil doesn't deign to join us.
No.
You'd have to hit me on Facebook.
No, we often talk about you, though. We even gave you a code name and special assignments and everything last night, Phil.
Maybe I'll join. But I'm going to add perverted stuff all the time. You'll have to deal with it.
Better there than on Facebook. Me.
There is one particular...
Those pictures were not perverted.
the former one of the former hosts of Earth 2 podcast... OG Wheels has a very not safe for work Twitter feed. But he's a good guy, and he used to be on the I don't call other comic book podcasts rival. I'm going to say co-equivalent podcast Earth 2.
Well, is there, you know,
so you're saying there are enemies?
We can all, you know, it's not an either or. We don't have time slots. We're going up against each other. I listen to a huge number of comic book related podcasts.
And
so what don't you like about these guys?
Still.
And should I continue with more of my ignorance-based learning?
Yes.
Or does someone want to jump in?
Go for it. Learn us.
All right. So sometimes I'm pretty embarrassed to call myself a comic book fan.
Oh, here we go. No, I'm just kidding.
Here we go. Pity.
Because I was walking down Artist Alley, and this guy's corner booth catches my interest. And I look, and he's got these IDW books he's worked on. And I had never heard of this title. And, like, it was up to issue 9 or something. And I don't expect to read everyone, but IDW is a pretty big company. And to never have heard of it, it's just... fucking embarrassing. It's a Jin Rise, like the genie, like the J-I-N-N.
Okay, yep.
Are you boys familiar with this book?
I tried a couple, I think.
What was interesting is this guy had taken over, I think, with issue 6. And the first trade was out, but I just picked up issue 7 because I liked his artwork and wanted to try it. And I'm like, oh, Andrew Huerta. That's interesting. I really like your artwork. And then I'm like, oh, he's a new guy. And then when I get home, one more of my ignorance, he was the first artist on the Jim Zub Pathfinder book, which is another book I had picked up. So, again, I just felt really bad that, like, I really need to be better at recognizing names, like, and people.
Isn't there, like, 70 books a week that come out? Like, how can you know everything?
Right, but this is like an art that I enjoyed, and I read another book he had worked on recently. It just seems like I could have really picked up the pace here. But the credit on issue 7, so it starts the new arc, and it's David Liss is the written by, script assist by Sohab Awan, and then the art by Andrew Huerta, and Stephen Downer is the colorist. So what this is basically aliens invade, and they have to collect a bunch of genies to fight the aliens, which is a pretty cool concept.
That's a lot of bottle rubbing.
Yeah, and what
should have went
is
with just that's a lot of rubbing.
Has this kind of crazy art style, especially with the colors. So the genies run with, like, particular colors Like there's a blue one and a green one, and in this one they recruit the fire one that's kind of red and orange. And I just think he's got this really detailed artwork, and the aliens are like these big kind of rocky monsters, and it's just visual eye candy.
Does he do? Does like, he do the colors too?
No, the colors are done by that was the Stephen Downer is the colorist. And he showed me some of the first trade when they had a different artist. So if you only looked at the first few books, the art style is much different now. And what was also interesting was this: in this entire issue 7, not a single full-page spread or double-page spread, which I thought actually I was a little bit disappointed in, to be honest with you, because I like the art. I have this the alternate cover by him, which has the green base genie rising up against the alien over his shoulder, as opposed to the regular cover, which is a more calm one. But I just think he did a great job of having these monstrous creatures battling it out. And it was a really fun book. The only thing I could have done a little bit less with is kind of their people that run the genies. Give it a slight arguable Pokemon feel in a way. You know, I'd just rather have the genies fighting the aliens. I don't need the stupid humans. Sort of reminiscent of those Godzilla movies where I always hate when they have the subplots with people. Right. Like, I just want to see the monsters going at it. Like, I don't really
anger in you.
I was going to say Transformers. I don't need those people in there. Like, come on. Give me the robots fighting each other. Winnie the Pooh. I don't need Christopher Robin there. I want to see Winnie the Pooh.
Until Christopher Robin's gone, and then you're like...
Fuck Winnie the Pooh. I want Piglet.
You ever read The Tao of Pooh or The Day of Piglet?
Yes.
Those are great.
I don't think so.
The Uncarved Block. That's what Pooh is.
But anyways, this is a pretty cool looking. Like, flip through it if you see Andrew Huerta's art on the recent issues.
I haven't read the books, but I've heard of Huerta. And you know, you don't kick yourself for not, it takes a sec, you know, unless you're a pretty girl, it's going to take a second, introduction to be able to like, you know, make an imprint. So, to say that it took you two books to realize that this guy was somebody that you now will recognize, I think that's more than fair.
And you have 9 issues to read at once. It's awesome.
Yeah, but what are the odds I'm going to remember this guy the next time he comes around? But yes, anyways, I just wanted to say that, you know, keep your eyes open in Artist Alley, kids. Like, you know, sometimes you see people and it turns out they've actually, you're more familiar with them than you think you were from the get-go.
Indeed.
Andrew, do you know the Mysterious Strangers?
Yes, that's the Chris Roberson one.
And Scott Kowalczyk, who did the Intrepids.
Yeah, that was a free comic book day, the first issue, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yeah, I think the first volume of the Mysterious Strangers just wrapped up. I gotta say, cool stuff.
The like first issue gave me a very strong, like, Steed and Mrs. Peel Avengers meets Doom Patrol.
Not the direction I would go, but yeah. Like, I was thinking more of, like, Tintin and Blake and Mortimer and, you know, like, all those good Belgian comics type of stuff.
Belgian. You and your Tintin goes to the Congo.
where he goes into an opium den to hide in children's comics.
Yes, and he has such sensitive depictions of foreigners.
Oh, that's sad. Why am I laughing?
Because Andrew's funny.
Apparently. But yeah, I enjoy myself some 60s Cold War super spy adventures. So
says the guy that last time talked about a comic that he loved with Butt Blaster in it.
This is true. You're saying that wasn't fun?
I'm saying I don't trust your judgment anymore.
Well, I gotta balance out some of the serious stuff with... some of the more funny stuff.
By the way, I liked Imagine Agents and I liked Samurai Jack. Yes. So thanks for the.
I haven't tried Samurai Jack.
They were both. You were spot on.
And who's Samurai Jack by again?
Jim Zub.
Okay, there's another writer coming up that's doing it, I think. Someone I liked. I'm excited for.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I did pick up the Sherman and Peabody one. I haven't read it yet, though.
Oh, that came out? I missed it.
Yeah.
It looks like it has a lot of words. You know, because I notice these types of things.
Well, you're the only one of us with a stopwatch by the comic book stand, so...
Well, speaking of stopwatch, if you were going to time the Mysterious Strangers, not one of the most text-heavy comics, but still enjoyable and worth your time. This is another one of those that's not in the like half an hour category, but yeah, I enjoy a cool romp. It kind of reminds me of in the 60s when you have the X-Men or the Doom Patrol and you have that guy in a wheelchair. And then he sends operatives out into the field. And these guys all have, like, power in their hands, like, whether they have, like, time manipulation or they mess up electronics or they have, like, the death touch.
Whoa. Yeah, I can see how Doom Patrol was way off. The guy in the wheelchair ordered
it. I know, Eddie said around. Doom Patrol, too. I was going to say something, but I was like, oh, I'll stop being an asshole.
But, you know, that's why they wear gloves, because if your hands are, like, doing all this crazy mojo, you might not want to put that out there all the time.
The death touch is actually a power I've always loved with characters. I don't know why.
Well,
the stink finger.
The stink finger. God, that's an awesome name.
Well, there was a reason in my childhood I made up a superhero called the Touch of Death. But yeah, this plays on other tropes that I love, too. It's like you have that ancient meteor falling to Earth, and then you have ancient dig sites, and there's temples, or then there's, like, people that create crazy music, and they're, like, ushering a new era in where gods will come and destroy the Earth, and just a lot of good fun.
That sounds great.
You read such strange comics. Like, I'm still trying to figure out why the last comic you talked about is called Fried Rice.
So am I.
Because you read it in 15 minutes?
So that was one of those serious comics that Kevin was talking about?
Yeah.
Very good. How about I take you guys way back for a history lesson?
Oh, yay.
Back up the bus.
Have you ever heard of Star Reach?
No.
Yeah, why does that sound familiar?
Well, I've got the old and the new tied in here because they're Tomorrow's publishing. We all like Tomorrow's publications, don't we?
We do.
They just recently came out with a Star Reach companion, which I was eagerly awaiting. It's by Richard Arndt, A-R-N-D-T, and it goes over my beloved Star Reach, which ran for 18 issues from 1974 to 79. And it was an anthology, and it got reprinted by Eclipse in the mid-80s, which is where I discovered it, and they colored all of the stuff and called it Star Reach Classics. And it was one of the first mainstream, if you want to call it that, indie books that actually got put into, that made it to the stands, basically. More adult, kind of like heavy metal, which started a year after Star Reach, actually. And actually completed a few of Star Reach's stories that didn't finish in Star Reach. And it was put together by Mike, don't confuse me with Gary, Friedrich. Mike Friedrich was a letter writer in the 60s, turned pro, basically. Worked for Marvel, he had a long run on Iron Man for Marvel, he had a long run on JLA for DC. And I should have said too, the Star Reach Companion, it's retail $28, but digitally it's only $10. And on the tomorrows.com site, Tomorrow's TWO, on the site until December 15th, they're having a 40% off sale. You can get the print copy for $17. It's like $16.95 or something like that, or $16.50 or something. What was so cool about this anthology is Friedrich put together all the indie talent kind of the time. Howard Chaykin, Jim Starlin, who did, you reminded me of saying that you read a short creation story and talking about wordless comics. Jim Starlin had a running gag in several Star Reaches. One of was a one-page gag, The Birth of God, which has like four panels, horizontal long panels, vertically stacked of like nothing, and then on the last panel is like all of outer space and just like these two like transparent eyes, basically, like all of a sudden just blink. And he had this death story that he had a couple of installments, if you will, and it's kind of the death coming back and giving the whole story of his role in the universe and his function and all that business. All really cool. Barry Windsor Smith did stuff. P. Craig Russell did a series of opera adaptations that were P. Craig Russell art. I'll definitely post some on the forum. Steve Lealoha did a Duckaneer that was like a Howard the Duck type story. Frank Brunner did a Barbarian story and some other work. Frank Sirocco, long before Alien Legion, was doing work here at Star Reach. Gray Morrow, Walt Simonson, Jeffrey Jones, Michael T. Gilbert, who would do the Mr. Monster stuff. Paul Levitz and Steve Ditko did a piece in one of the issues. And Mike Vosburgh did some of his Dirty comics, started doing them there. He's still doing them today, right through on Comixology. You can find him doing the Private Eye stuff.
I was going to say the first three covers of Star Reach, there's nudity on the covers.
Yeah, Vosburgh started with Linda Lovecraft back then, who had a name change when he would eventually publish her again in the 80s and 90s. But this Star Reach companion gives you a nice big interview with Mike Friedrich, a checklist of all the stories and creators that contributed to the 18 issues, almost 30 pages of mini interviews with various creators done now, but about that time. They go through a timeline and a checklist of early independent comics of the era, which is very entertaining and educational. And kind of the landscape in the comics industry, both before Star Reach and after, and kind of what Star Reach kind of did for the industry and ended up kind of fostering Pacific Comics and Eclipse and First and all those other independent comics that would boom in the early 80s. And then they also reprint at the end some short, complete stories by Walt Simonson, Steve Lealoha, Gilbert, Chaykin, Dave Sim, and P. Craig Russell. Really great companion book. Totally worth the $10 digital, which is how I got it. But for $17 for print, that's awesome.
Well, I want the original issue or the issues now.
Yeah, there. I have not a complete collection of them, but I have a bunch of the Star Reach classics, and then I probably have probably about 10 issues of the original Star Reach, and it was good stuff. You never knew what you were getting, but it was high quality stuff. And when you go back and you see it's those creators, it's like, wow. This is cool.
Well, I'm a sucker for anthologies.
This was,
if I see one, I'll buy it up.
This was one of the first. I wish they would reprint, but obviously with it being all those creators, that would be hard to do.
Well, hopefully it'll come out digital one day.
That would be good. Anything else, Jens?
Well, I read the first issue of Aliens vs. Parker by Boom Studios. It's four issues. It's all out. I think the trade's out or comes out soon.
How was it?
It's well, it's done by Paul Scheer, who's a comedian from that show The League, a couple other shows. He's a comedian I really like. And this is his first comic he's done. And it's basically these delivery guys in space, and they get this call and go to this planet. And there's no life there or anything, so they're kind of freaked out. And all of a sudden, through a Stargate, all these like military ships come through. But it turns out just to be these mercenaries, and they board their ship, and they don't really know what's going on. Parker, who's kind of, I wouldn't say a loser, but he's a bit of a fuck-up, kind of clumsy and stuff, he ends up falling for one of the girls. So the mercenaries leave, and they go to that planet. You're kind of wondering why. And so they decide to follow them, so they end up crashing on the planet, then the issue ends. So I don't know what happens afterwards, but I'm guessing whatever they're up to down there, the mercenary people, is no good, and these guys are going to get caught in it and end up becoming the heroes or something, maybe. But I really liked the first issue. It really drew me in, and I really want to read the second issue, so I'm excited to get into it. Did you guys, didn't read it at all?
I picked it up and flipped through the first issue, but waited to get the other ones, and then haven't gotten back to it, actually. What I didn't understand is this, like, Parker in space? Like, is this the Parker from, like, the novels and the Darwin Cook, like, crime?
No.
What Parker? Who's this? Who's Parker?
Parker is just this, like, young guy who delivers mail. Packages
and he thing. And he's original to this story.
Yeah, this is all brand new. Yeah, this is more of like it's a comedy space,
because for this to follow you know all of those other Mars Attacks crossovers then to have a Parker
well this is Boom.
Gotcha.
Yeah, because that's
it's how it's Parker Lewis can't lose.
Ah, okay.
What?
Now I'm confused.
Is that a black and white TV show?
No.
That was a short run TV show on Fox that some of us have fond memories of, and apparently a lot of people just don't know it.
In the 90s, right?
No, this is not Richard Stark's Parker at all. There's no comparison there at all. This guy is a useless hero.
Gotcha.
But it's like
you can't lose.
It's basically like, obviously, Paul Scheer is a fan of movies like Alien and stuff like that. And this is just movies like that, but with a bit of a comedy twist on it.
I'm going to have a better time engaging it now that the veil has been lifted.
Yeah. I'm definitely excited to read the other three issues, and I'll be reading them tomorrow, probably.
Should I throw some Valiant in here?
I knew you were going to bring it up.
You read some.
Three episodes in, and I haven't brought it up yet.
You've brought it up every episode.
Well, I'm digging some Archer and Armstrong. I don't know how familiar you guys are with that book. I think
I'm reading the new one. I never read the old one, but I'm reading the new one.
So are you up to date? Very much want to.
I am probably an issue or two. But what I don't. They went to that strange land.
Far away.
Yeah, with the girl and the gen. I don't know how spoilery it all is, but that's about where I left them off. And then, that's about. So what was that? Probably issue 12 or something.
Yeah, because I think this is maybe 13, because 14 and 15 start the next arc, which is the Sect Civil War.
Yeah, I haven't gotten that far.
So I don't know how spoilery I should get about this, but you find out the secret origins of the sect, which is like the grand conspiracy of like it seems like every secret organization within the Valiant universe. But the reason why I'm really digging this arc is because it goes back to like Spider-Man, you know, when he's like having a gang war and you have all those different like mob bosses like fighting for territory. I'm trying to think of another book that did that, like maybe like a Daredevil or a Punisher, but it seems like Spider-Man was always involved in that type of thing. Well, this is pretty much like that type of story going on. Like you have the 1% and then like just a lot of crazy groups. Like they have a double page spread in issue, I think it's 14. Where you have 12 different groups, and it's like even introducing like new crazy criminal organizations in here. So you have like space aliens that are at war with like the Church of Retroology, and like this crazy group that's like worshipping, like sort of like Darkseid's anti-life equation. They were the Null, and then you just have like it's just bonkers. Because then there's, like, these gnomes show up in one panel. Like, they're the gnomes of Zurich. And then you have where Archer's from, the Dominion. And then you have the Master Builders, which are supposed to be, like, the Masons. And, like, all these guys are just, like, frenzying and fighting it out on the streets of America.
It might help the listeners to point out the writer is the excellent,
oh, yes,
yet humorous Fred Van Lente. So... if you're familiar with some of his like the Taskmaster miniseries for Marvel. They tend to have a bit of a humor component with some exaggerated elements. So that's they're not meant to be taken sort of on the nose.
Yeah, I don't know if someone would get more upset with like some of these groups, like the 1%, but it's sort of like equal opportunities for like every religious group or capitalists or whatever you whatever your ideals are. They pretty much have a group for you. They even have like one group that was eliminated called the Green Dragon Llamas, which were basically like Nazis from World War II. And then they just keep on introducing more. Like you have the Black Block in here, which is basically they have a like a blockhead and they have a like a question mark on it. And it seems at this point they're kind of like anarchists. And then you have other dudes called the Hashish Eaters. Just really, really crazy stuff. I should mention the artist for this arc too is Carrie Evans. Wasn't the biggest fan when they were on, I think it was Harbinger, but the work here looks, I don't know, for some reason it looks much better.
Cool.
But anyways, yeah, the second I issue is kind of... I do read a bunch of
the Valiant books as well, Kevin. You're not alone.
But I wanted to mention the second issue too, because you're expecting like a continuation of the story. And it's basically like a 3,000-year-old pub crawl. So Armstrong, like, he's a big dude. He's into the drinking. He's immortal. So he drinks a lot. So all through this issue, they have, like, beer stats. They tell you what beer he's drinking, where it was brewed, the alcohol content, the taste. And then it has his stats for, like, how many he's consumed. So, like, one place he'll have 5 beer, then he'll have 10 beer. And, like, by the end of the issue, he's, like, somewhere at, like, 53 beer, and then they'll have a star. This would kill the average person.
It's like hanging out with Chris Neeson.
Exactly. What I think is really cool, though, it goes to, like, some actual historical events, so educational. But I didn't know it was educational at the time, so there's, like...
Oh, you got fooled into learning.
I know, but that's, you know, I guess that's kind of a trait of Fred Van Lente, isn't it?
Well, him and Ryan Dunleavy did the Action Philosophers, then the History of Comics, and their new one is Action Presidents. So, yes, they like to do historical books with a bit of humor.
And you're too humble to say, but they're also your old college buddies that you made comic books with back in college that you referred to earlier.
Yeah, I don't think that reflects well on them, but I'll take whatever help it gives me.
So they go to London, England, October 16th, 1813. Any guesses what event that would be?
1813.
Good bombs.
Is that the... Wait, I think that was November, the 5th of November.
You're getting too serious. It's the Great London Beer Flood.
Oh.
So, but this book is a humor book, so I'm like, okay, maybe in this universe there's something like that, but no, actually there is, like, some kind of crazy thing that where, like, one brewery hit another brewery, and it was like a domino thing. And, like, there was this huge wave of beer that went down the street and, like, killed all these people and injured people.
And now they don't have moving breweries anymore.
But it's just, I just found that really interesting. And then, of course, once I'm looking up that, I'm like, I see, like, this U.S. thing. I'm like, oh, you might also be interested in, like, the Great Molasses Flood in, like, Boston or something. And then
you know
I'm like, really? And it's like, we could smell the molasses for months later, and people died. They were stuck in this sticky substance. So not only is this comic entertaining, educational as well.
Whenever you mention humor, I always think of that old Zappa, does humor belong in music?
Yeah.
Or actually, does humor belong in comics? Boys, you like humor books?
You bet.
Definitely.
Phil?
Is it from the 60s?
You know what? but I'll tell you.
No, just any. Like, do you like funny comics?
I love funny comics. I love humor, so yeah.
But also, like Zappa, sometimes you just got to shut up and play your guitar. So I like it when, you know, you just pull all the straps out and just really let us see what you have artistically and creatively as well. So I think there's room for both, the silly side and the show us your chops side.
But yeah, this arc was promoted like, oh, the funny book is going away. Like, it's all serious now. And it's like, well, there is some fallout from the previous arc that amps up the serious level, but it also hasn't lost its humor. And issue 14 even has one of these cool 16-bit covers where it's Street Fighter.
Yeah.
So they show like all the different groups on here, and then it's like a selection
screen. I like those covers, yeah.
Yeah, where you can pick the characters, and like you can pick the characters from the different groups, like the Ninja Nuns and everything, but you also have like General Redacted or like a Dino Rider or a Raptor or like all these crazy things on the cover. That's pretty cool too. That I know it seems like Valiant might have originated for this version of Aaron covers, because I've seen a lot of other companies.
They started off, I believe, because I think they were the first ones I noticed, but now I'm starting to see it on the other people do it. I like the 16-bit covers.
Yeah, like I've seen a Deadpool one now from Marvel and stuff like that too. Yeah. But that's pretty much my favorite book out of Valiant right now. And whenever there's some crazy gang war, I'm all over that. Who doesn't like a gang war in comics? I mean, like, not in
my backyard.
Thank Andrew. Andrew has enough of gangs.
The Rose versus the Kingpin.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah, the Spider-Man one. That was a good one.
Save it for Marvel Noise, gentlemen.
Yeah, come on.
I just find it funny, too, that they have a whole Akhenaten thing in here, and I'm like, oh, I'm like Dreadstar and, you know, thinking back to Steve and everything.
Love it. All right, gang. Well, that covers a few bases of what we've been reading lately. So it seems like a good time to wrap it up. So let's do it. Thanks for assembling the group and sharing what you've been reading, gang.
Oh, you're welcome, everybody.
Thanks for inviting us back to the bunker, Steve. Always a safe haven in the world.
Remember to check us out on the Indie Comic Book Noise Facebook page.
Come on, talk to us, people.
And the forum on the 11 o'clock comics forum, which is in the Comic Book Noise subsection. So you got to go through the Comic Book Noise portal into the world of Derek Coward's control. Our corporate overlord.
We post cool images and links and all kinds of fun stuff.
And we'll try to assemble again sometime soon, but in case it is after the new year, happy new year, everyone, and hope this year was a good one, and next year's even better. Take it easy, gang. Later. Later, later.
Yeah, we need some kind of crazy sign-off. About making ours independent noise. Sticking it to the man.
Sponsored by nobody. That's how we do
doing podcasts the way we do.